Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, how you doing, buddy?
Well, I'm good, Matt, and I'm glad you asked that question. Because okay. I'm determined to be good. Not only am I good, I am determined to be good.
Nice. So are you determined to turn your phone off? God, that's a loud ping.
Shut up, all right? You know what I realized is, it's not. And this is what I'm saying good. I've got to harness my positivity because in this bubble of COVID in the house, my id has taken over. There's no filter anymore because I don't deal with people normally. So, I'm talking to you and you're you give me a little jam, shut up. <It's> I need to harness it back in. You know what? I need to be more repressed.
Yeah. 3 seconds ago, you said, I'm determined to be good. I remind you, your phone is exceedingly loud as we're doing a recording. You're shut up. I'm the one trying to be the professional here.
You know, everything you did was right.
Yes.
And everything I did was wrong.
Yep.
And I know this about myself, that I am always wrong. So here's my goal, Matt. Positivity.
Yay.
Positivity and repression. And I'm pretty sure they go hand in hand.
Oh, absolutely they do. 100%. If you want to be positive, you got to positively lie all the time.
You know, you're a good example of this because, you know, you and I have known each other really well for more than 2 decades. And yep. I think you're full of shit, but it works for you. And what you're not full of shit about is that this is a strategy to get to somewhere you're trying to go.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There are times I'm absolutely full of shit, but my versions of full of shit, it usually leads to less conflict.
Right.
Usually leads to more fun.
Yes.
So
you will put up with the little phony to get to the big good.
Yeah.
100%. And God bless you. Well, again, we ended the last pod with Be Like Matt. We started this pod with Be Like Matt. Am I just going to Mr. Ripley you at some point?
Oh, God, that's a good question. By the way, good poll there. Does that mean we're listening? That'd be awesome if we Mr. Ripley this. We're in jazz clubs in Europe in the 50s. That's not the worst place to be, aside from the murder that comes.
I'm too disorganized to kill you, Matt. You'd see it coming a mile
away. I just want to be Philip Seymour Hoffman in tan linen outfits, just being really loud, just wandering through Portofino or something
Cause,
like that.
Cause you are Philip Seymour Hoffman in linen outfits, loud and wandering through Portofino.
It's so true, just without the drug problems.
I love when you get dressed up because you look like Henry Hill from The Music Man.
You gotta look good. You gotta be snappy.
Hey, before we get into sports, I want to throw something out to you. So I decided for Lent, I'm not going to tweet. I haven't really gone on Twitter, but it's a really good way to keep up with information. So I'll probably go on Twitter, but I'm not going to tweet until Easter. And did you know why? There was actually one tweet that convinced me.
What's that?
I sent out a note about Aaron O'Toole.
Yeah.
And I had noticed that in a bunch of stuff, he was kind of getting away from the ripping Justin and more into the, hey, here's my wife and I on our first date, or this is when I lived in Halifax. And it was very humanizing. And I tweeted that I thought that was very smart for him because he's not going to convince people he's not an angry QAnon guy in secret by ripping Justin every single second. He needs to show the opposite to the more centrist voter. And I thought, whoever's advising him, this is smart. And I got 2 likes for that. And 1 comment that said he's lying. And I thought, when I criticize him, I will get dozens of likes. But I wasn't even necessarily supporting him. I was just saying, I think this is a much smarter way of trying to talk to the electorate to bring down the temperature. And what was really interesting to me was, it was a tweet about bringing down the temperature. And people didn't like it. And I thought, I don't want to participate in this. There's no value in me sort of mugging for the camera and trying to convince people that I'm like, there are things that are genuinely worth being angry about. But if the only way you can express yourself is anger, you've lost the ability to talk and you've lost the ability to listen.
You know, it's funny. We're going to stick on this topic for a couple more minutes, and this is going to dovetail into Nylander. We'll get to that in a second. But it is true. Like, if you want to get likes on Twitter, just rip Trump, make a joke about Ted Cruz, and it's easy and very well warranted. But it's like, it's very easy to get the likes on Twitter. You know how to do it. Like, it's why I've never once tweeted about Trump, because I find it boring. But, you know, you do something where, you know, you're sort of middle of the ground and saying, okay, good on Aaron. You're not praising Aaron O'Toole. You're just saying this is a good shift, you know, from the predictable rip Trudeau thing. And, you know, what you wrote was reasonable, sensible, and no one's going to give it any attention.
The thing that really jumped out at me, Maddie, was I'm not a conservative by nature. I lean left in my politics.
Yeah.
But I think it's better if the conservatives have a good leader. I think it's better if a political party that has the ability to speak for 30-40% of the population is led by someone who has good intentions or isn't actually a QAnon angry person in disguise. I hope he really is that guy. That would be better for everybody. But to even suggest that, I kind of felt like this rebuffing, like the idea that, well, let's just get to a place where we can have a reasonable conversation was sort of met with a, that's not interesting to us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way,
I just didn't want to participate in that. I thought that was really boring.
So then you're getting rid of Twitter. Are you keeping all the fun foods for Lent?
No, actually, I spent about, I'd say, I've spent half the last week juice fasting.
Mm-hmm.
So that could have been the cause of the shut up at the beginning of the show. Yeah. I don't think I've been a real pleasant person to be around, but we're coming out the other side.
Are you basically hangry? Are you hangry?
All the time. Yeah. Hangry all the time. What did you give up for Lent? Because I know you're very big into fruition.
Oh, yes. No, I'm glad you asked this. I've given up Brussels sprouts, mm-hmm. Cauliflower. I've given them up.
How about unsweetened sugars?
Unsweetened sugars. Yeah, I've given rid of that.
Cereals, I should say.
Oh, yeah. No. Anything that's, if it doesn't have cocoa or a picture of a monster on it, I'm not eating it.
Say the same thing. It has to have a cartoon monster on the box for you to eat it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, question for you.
Yeah.
Of the three, which one did you grow up with? Chocula, Frankenberry, or Booberry?
Chocula.
Yeah, me too. But actually, I think the best of the three is Frankenberry.
Frankenberry is underrated, but as a kid, you were afraid of it because it had the word berry, while chocolate was much more familiar.
And Count Chocula is just such a great, like, I don't know who character designed that, but, you know, he looks like a vampire. He's got a bit of edge to him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I'd like to interview all the people that made these cereals where basically they knew they were just trying to fatten up children.
Oh, are you kidding me? Like big sugar, big tobacco, big anything, really. It's amazing how the word big has come to denote evil and manipulative.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Big pharma, big tech. If you're big anything, you could be pretty sure there's some fucked up stuff going on.
And also, I agree with Aaron O'Toole. Big government. You're right, Bob. Sounds evil. Look what I did there.
Okay, no, but you circled back, and that's good. So let's get to your observation about Nylander and use the big tech, the Twitter tie to get into it.
I realize that talking about Nylander has gotten boring and predictable. We know he's a good player. He scores some goals. And like, oh, yeah, he's a good player. We know that sometimes he loafs and has defensive indifference. And you know how we know this? Not because of a gas bag, but because the coach benches him. It's right there for you to see. Mm-hmm. So It seems to me the conversation about Nylander is not about Nylander. It's about the conversation. It's about the two sides. It's about the yelling. It becomes about a generational difference. It becomes about all these other things. The Nylander conversation is no longer about what William Nylander does on the ice, because that one's boring and predictable. So now it's moved to just talking about him.
So full disclosure, I like Steve Simmons, and I consider him not a friend because we don't hang out, but someone whom I like Steve on a lot of levels. And yeah, when he wrote the William Nylander article a couple of weeks ago, and Twitter went crazy because he suggested he was a good player that maybe had a dimension missing. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what everybody thinks when they talk about William Nylander? And in order to think that, don't you just have to simply have eyes and a TV remote?
Yes. Oh, yeah. When I saw that there was all this vitriol, I read the piece. I'm like, well, he's not really taking personal shots at Nylander. Tavares gets mentioned a lot. Tavares gets mentioned almost as much as Nylander does in that piece. And I mean, it really was just the fact that the cover had Nylander on it and, you know, a C-level joke about IKEA. And suddenly everyone was really angry. I remember just seeing that on Twitter and reminding myself Twitter's not real life. It's 24% of the population. But I was so confused that I think the anger, it wasn't about Nylander. It's just general anger towards Steve and the media.
So a couple things here. And I'm so glad that you framed this as a generational thing. And I'm not sure it's necessarily an age generation as much as it is a way of looking at hockey generational thing. I remember when we were on the air together and we were interviewing Craig Button, and it was coming up to the Nylander draft. And I wasn't actually, I was kind of pulling for Nick Ehlers. I thought Nick Ehlers would be the right guy to pick. I said, but whoever it is, just don't let it be Nick Ritchie, who was a big player. And I thought,
oh, right,
they're going to just take another big plodding guy because he's tough. And, you know,
Tyler Biggs.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Freddie Gauthier, like, you know,
yeah,
let's let him grow into his skill. He's got size, you know. Anyway, yeah, the point being, you know, Button pushed back at the time, and he was sort of like, well, what's wrong with Nick Ritchie? He could be good. He could be this. He could be that. And look, I'm not criticizing, like, Craig's an expert. And what I realized I was doing was I wasn't making a scouting observation. I was making a generational observation, which is just don't go for the small skilled guy. Because I'd been kind of immersed in that hockey analytics world for a couple of years. And so I was predisposed to go, well, the small skilled guy is the overlooked guy. He's the jam. He's going to be the good one, right? And I kind of feel like Nylander were in the same place, which was, I mean, they wound up picking Nylander. But he's an example of the kind of guy that the old school GM wouldn't have picked. So he must be better because the old school GM sucks. And it's almost like you've decided in advance how this is going to play out. And if it doesn't play out that way, somebody else must have effed it up for you. Because mm-hmm. it can only work this way because generationally, this is what works. Like, people who've decided Nylander sucks are the same ones that were happy that they got Dave Boland because he was gritty and he was on a winner and he was going to be bring experience. And you know what he brought? He brought a hefty price tag and nothing on the ice. But he had character and he represented winning. You know, so the analytics group all said correctly, that intangible stuff can be pretty overrated, guys, you know, but at the same time, like, let's not let Nylander off the hook. He can be a floater.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, just him is, listen, it's so simple. He's a guy who's really good at scoring goals. He's a guy that the teammates seem to like. The puck is often on his stick, but then there's reasons why he's not getting the ice time that Matthews and Marner are getting. There's reason he gets benched every now and then. And I think what angers I'll just call them anti-Nylanders, is that the analytics, they'll keep throwing expected goals and zone entries to defend him. And it's like, what are you doing? It's like, both groups are stupid. And I'm Homer Simpson in the episode where he doesn't go to church and he says, everyone's stupid but me. And then, you know, then the fight and then the whole place is on fire.
Yeah,
then the house burns down. But it's like, for the people really defending Nylander, it's like, you don't need to. You're not defending Nylander. What you're doing is attacking media, because Nylander at some points disappears. Well, and then what's that?
It's a proxy war.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's not about Nylander. You know, and the people that think that Nylander sucks and is lazy, well, they're dumb as well, because you cannot be lazy and be as good and score as many goals as Nylander. But those people just hate the analytics. So you're right. It's just, it's a proxy war, and Nylander's the guy in the middle of it.
So for everyone who called for Nylander to be traded and were mad at the number he was getting, you were wrong. He's really good, and he's going to, in all likelihood, as he probably will for a long time, meet the production of that contract in terms of his output. So you were wrong. And the last thing the Leafs needed to do was get rid of a scoring winger, because as we've seen post Johnsson and Kapanen, they need more scoring on the wing. The idea that you would diminish that is silly. But to everybody who says, you know, Nylander is above reproach, well, that's ridiculous. Like, you know, we used to have this conversation about Erik Karlsson. Some people thought, well, he just can't be the best defenseman in the league because he makes mistakes, you know? And he did make mistakes, but he created more opportunities. And in the end, there was a net surplus of good versus bad. Some of that's hard to see. And, you know, Jake Gardner kind of lived through this in our market too. Like, when you make mistakes that are glaring, people will jump all over it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, why aren't we mad at Ilya Mikheyev?
Well, we are, but Mikheyev, really? He's, oh yeah, yeah. Trust me, people are getting really frustrated with Mikheyev. It's just, he plays fewer minutes. He's less important for the big picture. He doesn't make that much money. That's why.
Yeah, but he's also like an entire, like him on the ice in terms of offensive production, giant sucking sound.
Just, yes.
You know, it's like there must always be one. There has to be a fast winger on the Leafs that in the end looks spectacular and just can't put the puck in the net. You know, we got rid of Kapanen. We handed the title over to Mikheyev. Who knows who could be next? The Nylander thing really fascinates me because I feel like, you know, putting him and Tavares together is really almost symbolic in a way, because Nylander takes a lot of the criticism that people just don't want to give to Tavares. And I think Tavares is a much bigger problem in the immediate and certainly in the long-term future for the Leafs than Nylander is going to be. But nobody wants to say that because they like him.
I will say this. Tavares is... The thing is, Tavares doesn't commit the sin that Nylander commits, which is the sin of defensive indifference. Mm-hmm. Even though... And by the way, when the Leafs got... when Ottawa came back and won 6-5, I went on the show the next day and said, Tavares is the reason this happened, because he just had a horrible giveaway that got it started. There is criticism of Tavares and his inability right now of scoring at even strength.
Let me ask you this question. Who is closer to living up to the term of his contract, Nylander or Tavares?
As of today, Nylander.
Right. Who do we talk about way more in the context of disappointment?
Nylander.
Right. So... to me, that's the disconnect and why I don't take the either side very seriously in this. I do think, though, it's interesting. Okay, I want to put a pin in a thought and come back to it. So when people talk to you about Nylander on the show, what do you do?
What happens to me? What do I do?
Well, because it's the hot topic, right? Like, you're responsible for the hot takes. And the audience out there either wants to yell at the radio because... they agree with it or they don't agree with it or whatever, but you know,
I don't, the funny thing is you can say a reasonable thing and it'll feel like a hot take with, when it comes to Nylander. I threw out a tweet and it started with, you know, something along the lines of, I was making fun of how this is a hot topic. I'm like, you know, instead of religion, let's deal with something really controversial, Nylander. And then I just said, over this amount of games, he's not shooting. He hasn't scored. What do we make of this? Is this a big deal, little deal, no deal? Like, it was a pretty just calm, normal, I'm curious what people think. And everyone jumped on. The Nylander zealots were angry, and it soon just became a referendum about the media. You know, and that's what I find fascinating. And like, I tell people all the time, like, I'm not here ripping, you know, I'm not here ripping him. I'm showing the numbers, the lack of production. And there should be some concern. I also do the same with Tavares. It's just people don't want, no one wants to engage in the Tavares conversation. They all want to engage on the Nylander one. If you're pro or anti, And Jonas Siegel wrote a piece from The Athletic, and he's right. It has to stop, because in the end, we know who Nylander is.
That's the thing, is there's no mystery to this. There's been a million guys like Nylander, and there'll be a million more to come. Super talented. But for whatever reason, consistency, he's hot, he's cold, he looks indifferent. Sometimes guys for whom the game comes very easy look more indifferent than they really are. McGillney didn't always look like he was trying, but he was so incredibly skilled. Like, that's just one of the things. Sometimes when someone, you know, when they make it look easy, it looks like they're not trying. And he doesn't have a particularly physical game, so there's no evidence he's trying if the results aren't there. That's a little too simplistic, but you know what I mean. I want to throw a name out to you by way of comparison. And I know you love the cross sports comparisons because they're rare.
Oh, I love them.
Kyrie Irving. Here's what I mean by this.
Hold on. Wait. Stop 1 second, Bob.
Yeah.
You get congratulations. Not only cross sport, but two different races. This is my favorite.
Yeah. Okay. And I didn't add the extra lap of gender, but, you know, I'll try to think of one for the future. So Kyrie Irving. I've read a lot about players and listened to pods and players talking about who they think the most talented player in the league is, like in terms of just pure skill. And I'm always amazed how often Kyrie Irving's name comes up. But amongst the players, he's kind of a legend just in terms of how they view his pure skill. Do you think of Kyrie Irving as one of the three best players in the league?
I think of his handle and his talent as certainly not only elite, but one of the top.
So if you were starting a team from scratch, would Kyrie Irving be the first, second, or third player that you started your whole franchise around?
Hell no, not even close.
Right. And I think what happens is with guys like Nylander or Irving or a million other guys who are incredibly talented is, for whatever reason, consistency is an issue, or, you know, some sort of abstract intangible is an issue. It's pretty rare that everybody puts it together. Like, Matthews has been thrilling this year, not just because of the results, but because all these things that we thought he needed to work on, he did too.
Yeah.
He does them in abundance. You know, I'm listening to Merrick and Justin Bourne the other day on Hockey Central talking about Austin Matthews shot blocking and what's the right way to shot block. Well, we're not having that conversation 2 years ago about, you know, is Matthews too defensively intense in a way he might hurt himself, you know? Like,
yeah,
all of these things that we said Matthews needed to do to become a truly transcendent player, he did. And now he is.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. And my God, you got three games coming up against Edmonton. You're going to have the Matthews versus McDavid conversation. And we all know McDavid is the best player in the NHL. But I hope for the first game, you know, McDavid has an off night. Matthews gets a hat trick, because I'm waiting. And I've been saying this a bunch. I'm waiting for the first Toronto gas bag with the guts to say that Austin is a better player than Connor McDavid, because it'll anger up Edmonton. It's not true, but I'm waiting for that.
Do you remember when you used to say something on the air and I loved it so much, I would cue the Mr. Perfect music?
Yep.
I wish I could do it right now, Matt, because you are so right. Those three games, if they're lopsided in either direction, but particularly if they're lopsided for Matthews, it's going to be thrilling. And I'm going to watch them really closely, because I am more invested in the narrative of individual players at this point than I am in the teams. I think this season, because they play in this Canadian division and the other teams all stink, you know, barring some kind of massive collapse, I can't see the Leafs not being the best team. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
There's no drama there. They're going to finish first in all likelihood. If they didn't, it's probably because they're coasting or injuries. But in terms of what we expect the team to be, in terms of like how good they are, they're better than everybody. It's not that interesting. It's getting kind of boring watching them kick Ottawa's ass. Well, maybe not that one night, but you know what I'm getting at.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's why these three games. Sorry?
We'll throw out Vancouver. They're a nice neutral communion wafer kind of team.
Wow. Yeah, that's hi, Vancouver. They get angry as well. The great thing about these three games is Edmonton, they're the hottest team. They've, you know, 9-1 in the last 10. Since they lost in late January to Toronto, they've been the hottest team, I think, in the entire NHL. So, and I agree with you. For a lot of, there has been a lot of stretches where it's felt boring. If Edmonton wins on Saturday, then there's only going to be like a couple points separating them and Toronto. Then it'll be interesting. Like, that's why I'm excited, because now it feels like there's a bit of a challenge again.
You're right. You're right. It could push back, because to your point, these three games could be a hell of a lot of fun and should be a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I think, like,
but no, but Bob, you're right about the idea of just going on more focusing on individual versus individual, yeah, because team success and failure is skewed just because how these divisions are set up.
And it's a perfect year for individual narratives, because Matthews is doing something that we just haven't seen a Maple Leaf player do. And now we're getting into these really meta conversations, like, will he retire greater than Matt Sundin, or you know, will he retire greater than Dave Keon? We're a little early, you know, to really dive into it. But it's just thrilling to see a guy who's the best goal scorer in the league and arguably the best player in the league, certainly in that elite category. You know, as Torontonians, we just don't have that. You think about Doug Gilmour, and there was the year he finished the Blues second in MVP voting, and, you know, he won the Selke, and, you know, we had that, but that was 90, that was the early 90s, can't remember.
That was not like 92.
92. So it's been a really, really long time, like 30 yeah. years since we've been able to say, hey, look at this player who's better than everybody else. Even Sundin at his best.
Oh, I know.
Guy.
No. Oh, no. Sundin would have a stretch, was like, ooh, no one's playing better than him right now. But at the end of the year, at his best, you'd be like, hey, he's the sixth best player in the league. And that might have been like his peak year.
So I'm going to throw a grenade into this, and you're going to think I'm crazy.
Do it.
Because we need to talk. We need to do some roster baiting, and it's almost impossible to roster bait with this team and this COVID setup. So I'm going to do it. You ready? Yep. I think the Leafs should trade Morgan Rielly.
There's been some, there's certainly been some of those rumblings. Ian Tulloch, who used to write for The Athletic and now writes for Maple Leafs Hot Stove, he's big into that. And I would be more on board with this if Rasmus Sandin hadn't like fractured his foot and is out for 6 weeks. So that's, and you know, that, and you know, Muzzin's been hurt in the past, but go with this, Bob, because, you know, I can see the merits in it.
All right, so Riley's number is coming up soon, and he and Barry have been good.
Yep.
But I'm starting to think, just when you see what's happening on the ice, I don't know that he is who we want him to be. I think he's good. He's obviously good. What is he, 16 points in 21 games this year? He's delivering. But I think we want him to be an alpha, and he's not. And the Leafs are very deep on the left side. But where they're not deep, like, their forward strength, once you get past that top line, isn't that great. And I don't know who's coming up in the pipe. And the reason why I throw this out here, this is just one scenario, but I see that Dregs and Pierre LeBrun are saying LA's looking for a left-handed dynamic defenseman.
Right.
I read that this morning. I guess that's insider trading this week. They want someone 25 or under. Well, it's not exactly Rielly, but he's 26, so it's not like he's long in the tooth. He can be yeah. your guy for a long time if you like him. And what do they happen to have? A surplus of young talent at center. I don't think that the Leafs, if they're being realistic, can say Tavares is going to be a dynamic number two center for the next 4 years. I'm not even sure he's a dynamic number two center this year. But if you were to get some exciting young prospect at center who maybe in 2 years might be able to step in and become the actual 1-2 punch going into the future with Matthews, because no one's going to supplant him, but he's going to need somebody, because all the metrics show that if you don't have two very, very good centers, you don't win. You just don't win. Not in the big picture. Maybe regular season, but not in the playoffs. You just need it. And what this brings me to is a very interesting place that I thought I would never be. The Leafs got to win.
All right.
The Leafs got to win now. The Leafs got to win now because their three best players are young, but they've tied themselves to this Tavares contract that I don't think that you can trade. And he's going to make $11 million. And in a year or two, I don't think he's going to be even the second line center of a great team. So I think their best shot is to maximize what he can offer. That's clearly going to be in the next year or two. Maybe you don't do that Riley deal because you think you can win now, especially in this crazy year. For me, I think it's impossible to say because, you know, they look really good against the North, and I think there's lots of exciting things, but what would they do in a series against Vegas or St. Louis or Colorado? It's, you know, who could say? So I bring myself to two crazy points. Both of them kind of hot takes. You can pick up on either one. I think if you traded Riley for some kind of forward help, particularly in the middle, I think it's a good idea. And two, I think the Leafs might actually be in win now mode.
I think they are in win now mode because also, you know, you got Riley and Freddie's contracts coming up. And as you mentioned, you know, Tavares is going on the, is getting on the downswing, and, you know, these young, the Marner, Matthews, Nylander, they're good. They're starting to hit their peak. So yes, there absolutely is a win now mode for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, I agree on that part. The Riley one, by the way, first off, how much, like, just all these questions would go away if Tavares was scoring, you know, just on even strength, even at an average level. You know, like, we wouldn't be talking about, do we need to split up Matthews and Marner? And this conversation we're having now isn't coming up. If it's trading Riley, if you trade Riley, then you also have to bring back someone that can help you win now. It's not about, you can't trade Riley for a prospect who could be ready in 2 years. It's got to also be someone that can help you win now. You know, that, and then if you lose Riley, then it's Muzzin and Hull as your number one pairing. Then it's Dermott, who looked good the other night.
Is it Muzzin and Brody?
No, I think Brody and Dermott. Yeah, you might have to mix that up a little bit.
Look, I don't want to play. I guess I invited the rosterbation.
You did. You did.
So I shouldn't be, you know, I shouldn't be critical when we are doing it.
Yeah.
What are you doing in there? None of your business.
Let me, I'm cleaning my hands. You've been cleaning your hands for 20 minutes. It's COVID. And I've been a patriot.
And there you and I are at the big board just slotting in different names. LD, RD, LD, RD. Yeah.
Can we have two guys shoot left on the same wing? No, you fool. Shut up.
You're right about Sandin. I mean, we kind of feel he's going to be good, but, you know, who knows? Look, I got so many questions about Dermott. I feel like we don't even understand who he is, and I keep waiting him for him to be really good. I don't think that's happened yet, but I also think he's probably better than we think he is. So these are all big questions. In the end, the Riley trade or not trade really comes down to this, is how much would Dubas, well, obviously get for him, but two, if you think they have a real chance to win this year, that's kind of a stupid move, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing.
A seasoned defenseman that you can trust in your top four. That's pretty stupid.
Yeah, that's why, like, well, listen, you know, there are certainly a lot of numbers that show that he's not been as great defensively. So, and his contract coming up soon. I get it. I get the conversation about trading Morgan Riley. I don't, because you don't know when there's going to be more injuries on defense, the Sandin issue, the fact that the words Martin Marincin have actually been floated around, that guess what, guys, Marty's back, you know, back again, Marty's back. He's a minus three. That doesn't rhyme. That's a concern.
The phone lines get surveilled and certain words will trip off like, you know, some sort of guy, you know, just so that you become like flagged. And I kind of feel like as soon as Marty Marincin's name gets thrown out there, there should be an AI that gets flagged and the Leafs threat level immediately rises a level.
Ooh, is this like when the American government is spying on you? And if you say words like C4, manure, Al-Qaeda, now suddenly you're on a list. If you say Martin Marincin, same thing.
Yeah, 100%. The AI is tripped off and immediately the Leafs threat level goes from green to yellow.
Yeah, that's so true.
Funny, actually, we could do that. We could even throw this out on our Instagram page. The five words that would trip the Leafs AI.
Oh, there goes your phone. Yeah. Okay, Bob. Well, you Matt, you know, well, you answer that out.
No. Yeah. No, Matt, hang on a second. Shut up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You shut up. Who was that who called you? Like, my phone is turned off. I powered my phone down.
Okay, you do your thing. I'll go take care of this.
All right, you go take care of that. Hey, by the way, our sponsor for this podcast is our lawyer, Jeff Pollack. If you need a lawyer, highly recommend. He did our wills. He's helped me with some other stuff. That sounds kind of like I'm into some sort of murky stuff. I'm not. But anyway, it's a small law firm. It's a very talented group of people that will be there for you. JeffPollack.com. That's Jeff with a G. JeffPollack.com. The phone number, 416-777-0088. 416-777-0088. Now, getting to a list of names that if you saw the name, it gets Toronto sports threat level. Let's see. I would go with Gardner, Morinson, Babcock, Vernon Wells' contract, Hidu, you know, those are Lenny Wilkins.
Most, Matt, you're missing the most obvious one. Mm-hmm. Hutchinson.
Oh, hey, he's played better. He's played better.
He has played better. But in terms of what triggers Leafs threat level,
yeah, that would certainly be one of them.
Definitely up there. Marchand, yeah, but in a different Marchand way.
Oh yeah. 4-1 game 7.
Game 7 and 4-1. Yeah. Oh my God, that's funny, Matt. That's so good. I got a couple questions about the Raps for you.
Yeah.
So they've been really good. I mean, I know they just lost again, but for about the last 25 or so games, they're one of the hotter teams in the East for sure, just behind Brooklyn. I think it's reductionistic to say it's just Siakam playing better, but a big part of it is clearly Siakam playing better.
Yep.
The Kyle Lowry stuff, what's your read on all of it? By that specifically, I mean all the reports floating about how they're going to handle trade deadline.
All the reports make sense because he's in his final year. He's won a championship. And the unique thing about Kyle Lowry is he works on any team seamlessly. Like, we all agree, James Harden is a better player than Kyle Lowry. But if James Harden goes to a team, you might have to have some ego massaging of the other stars there. It's going to have a more of a shift in terms of how that team plays on offense. And it means everyone is going to have to change their game. You put Kyle Lowry on any team and you almost don't have to change a thing. It's like night for night. Oh, do you want Kyle to score? Oh, great. He'll score. Oh, you just need him to be a facilitator? Fine. You need a veteran voice? Great. You know, he's not someone that's going to need 18 shots or needs the ball in his hands to be the best version of him. So, like, that's why you're going to get lots of talk with Lowry, because you could slide him into any contender and it makes sense.
It's a great way to look at it. And it makes me think about how much of an audition for a contending team that Kawhi year was, in that Lowry never tried to be Kawhi. But he supported him amazingly well on the court and also stepped in moments when he needed help. There were times where it was Lowry's hot shooting and sometimes Fred's that kept that team going, despite how great, almost historically great, Kawhi was during that run. But it's a great point. And I always get nervous when I hear stuff floated like, we would respect his desire to go to another team to win another championship. It's like, whoa, don't you think you can? I mean, the team's pretty hot. Apart from Brooklyn, there's no...
Yeah, but they here's the predictable cliche line. No, they're a good team. Listen, you don't... If you just have this team together, this core, they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to, I think, win a playoff round. You know, but that's their ceiling. It's just the cruel nature of this game. Do you have one of those 8 or 9 guys? Oh, no, you don't? You're not winning. And there's 2.5, sometimes 3 of them in Brooklyn. There's 2 of them in LA's, both the LA markets. You know, they're not winning the title. They're not.
It's amazing how cruel the NBA is in terms of what makes you actually elite. Like, when you say there's 2 in LA, people would say, Paul George, really? Are you sure? Mm-hmm. I think Paul George is pretty damn good. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it really is merciless how big a divide there is between the absolute best players. I mean, it's not tennis where there's such an incredible divide between the elite and everyone else, but it's pretty damn close. Cool. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's what team LeBron is on. And then there's, you know, there's five or six other of these legitimately great, legitimately great guys. And that's the NBA. That's how it is. And everyone goes, what about Detroit? I'm like, great. Give me the other example. And again, that Pistons team had everyone was at least a B plus, if not sometimes A minus. There was no B's on that starting five when the Pistons won the title over the Lakers.
And those are the outlier years, and they do happen. And, you know, the Raptors are
once.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. And it's not like the guys they had sucked. I mean, they were.
No. Who was the worst player?
You know, Rip Hamilton and Chauncey Billups and Ben Wallace. Like, they were all really damn good players.
The worst player of those five starters was Tayshaun Prince. Right. And he was a B-plus level player that year.
Yeah. You know, I'm really interested to see what happens with Miami, because Miami feels like they don't really have a true alpha, but maybe they could beat Brooklyn in a series. But they need another guy. And truthfully, like, as much as I hate Miami, be a great landing spot for Lowry.
It would be. Bam Adebayo is, you know, it just missed being an all-star. Jimmy Butler is an alpha. We saw what he did in the finals. So, you know, you've got those two guys. You've got Kendrick Nunn, Tyler Hero. You've got some nice Goran Dragic. You got some nice pieces. You bring in Kyle Lowry, and Lowry's also protection because Goran Dragic, he got hurt last year in the finals, you know, and Lowry, you know, he's a badass who just wants to win. He works perfectly with Spoelstra and Riley. Like, he fits everywhere.
So you remember when we were on the air before, and this was before Durant wound up going to Golden State, and I was already starting to bring Durant to Toronto?
Yep.
Dick. And then, of course, the whole city became obsessed with how do we get Giannis here. So I want to start this early. I want to be an early adopter of this, but I got a new guy. I covet someone else's star. I got a new guy for us. Yep. You ready for it? Karl Anthony.
Yep.
I want Karl Anthony Towns on the Raptors. And here's my pitch. If you ask NBA executives, I've been following this, they will tell you that he is maybe the greatest untapped resource right now in the entire league in terms of what skill set he possesses and what he's been able to accomplish with his team. They are a chronic mess. If you were Karl Anthony Towns and you were a part of that chronic mess that was the Minnesota Timberwolves, wouldn't you love a Masai Ujiri? Wouldn't you love Toronto, which now all of a sudden, oddly, weirdly, has become a model franchise in terms of how it treats players and how sensible it is about things?
Yep.
If you had COVID and you had gone through all of that stuff, I mean, this is me talking like I know the guy, which I don't. But wouldn't you love a stable environment and not to be in the States? Perfect Raptor. And, oh my God, him and Fred and OG. I'm leaving a name out.
I know.
You know, because you need the alpha, to your point. There's a lot of alphas who wouldn't come here. He's a Kentucky Wildcat. He's our guy. He's our guy.
Bob,
go get Carl.
I love it because you know what? I haven't heard this one. You know, it's Bradley Beal, Bradley Beal, Bradley Beal. Even though Bradley said, you know, he's never once said I wanted a Washington. But yeah, and like this would be a great rehabilitation for Karl Anthony Towns, where, you know, there's some stink on him because Jimmy Butler looked at Karl and Andrew Wiggins and said, I can't win with those guys. And in the end, Jimmy Butler was proven right. You know, and also this would be one of the few times a superstar gets to leave a cold environment and they get to come to Toronto, and Toronto is warmer than the city they were in before. There's that as well. I love this. I have no idea how many years he has left on his deal, but I love this.
Well, it's big ticket. You know, it's funny because instead of I'm taking my talents to South Beach, we would be East Beach.
Yeah.
For Minnesota, we would be East Beach. The beach of Lake Ontario.
I'm going to go for a run. Yeah, I'm going to go for an outdoor run after the show today. I mean, you know, it's February. Come on over. It's not as bad as it is in Minnesota.
So this is my thing. I don't know how to make it happen. I feel I'm pretty limited in my ability to affect change here, but I want Carl Anthony Towns on the Raptors.
Yep. No, I like this.
The drive for Cat.
You know what, Bob? I might steal this and use it on the show today. I will give you credit. Sure.
Well, that's not stealing.
I mean, finally, yeah, no, that is, I like it. I like it. It's a good deal. You know, it'd probably mean having to lose like a Siakam. Like, I don't know, like what sort of trade and picks and stuff. I have no idea how to do it. I always hate that part, you know, the realistic part of it all. But I think that's a great deal.
The next best, okay. The second best thing you can have in the NBA is high picks because you have a shot at a star in a trade.
Yeah.
The next best, the absolute best thing you can have is a star.
Mm-hmm.
And he is one.
Yeah.
I also, like, to your point, we're not getting a guy who's in the alpha seat. We're just not. You know, we only got Kawhi because he wasn't in the alpha seat, because of the injury, because of the whole shenanigans with the Spurs. Like, there was a bit of a cloud around him. That's what, even at a high ticket, you know, we were able to get him because, I'm not going to say damaged goods, but there was a cloud.
Yeah.
We're not getting a guy at his prime. Like, we're not getting Anthony Davis to say, you know what, LA, I'm sorry, but I thought about it. I'm going to Toronto. We need a guy with, as you say, a bit of a stink on him. Jimmy Butler may have finally done us an effing favor by throwing a shadow on Carl Anthony Towns.
God, Butler kills us every time. Did it the other night.
Every time. You know, it's so weird in sports because there are players that you know are great, but they seem to be especially great against you, and it clouds your perception of them. Like, if you asked me who the best player in the NBA is, I would tell you Jimmy Butler. You know, for years, it was the Chicago Bulls. Who's the best team in the league? Chicago Bulls. Or in the NHL. Who's the best team in the NHL? Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, because they always beat us.
Because they you just have a hard time against them.
Yeah, and the ironic thing about that is right now, the number one candidate for the MVP in the NBA is Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid has his worst shooting games against the Raptors. Right. We don't even need Gasol here. And he puts a, you're right. Yeah, you know, we're more fearful of Jimmy Butler than we are of Joel Embiid.
You know, that's such a great point about Embiid, too, because we've watched him be bested by our guys. And so I think there's this idea, well, you know, Embiid, like, he's really good. I know that. No. He's incredible. He's unstoppable, except to the Raptors. Do you have that in football with the Giants? Like some team, some guy that you hate to play because they always seem to come up big against the Giants?
Mm, well, the Giants have been bad for so long that everyone just comes up big.
who do we used to call Career Knight? I'm trying to remember. There was somebody on the Raptors who was like, you knew every time that someone rolled into town, they were going to get their career high in rebounds. I'm trying to remember what it was.
There was a time when I nicknamed the Raptors defense. Wow, this is so long ago. Remember when the Raptors were bad? And I nicknamed the Raptors defense the career highs. Because a guy would come in here and they'd get their career high against Toronto. And you know, I think I remember like Doug McDermott. I don't know why that name always sticks out. He would always just light up Toronto.
That's actually a really good one. See, if we had Doug McDermott on the team, we'd be unstoppable. And the sad thing about that reality is it doesn't translate. Like, if you actually make that guy part of your team, the power goes away.
Mm-hmm.
They go back to sucking. Evan Fournier, I remember the first couple times when he first came in the league and I watched him light it up from three against the Raptors, and I was convinced he was the next Ray Allen.
Yeah.
He's not.
No. Bob, before we end this, because I don't know if you realize we're 50 minutes in.
Well,
we've been chatting. I just want to know, and this actually been a really sporty one. How's everything with Charlotte, with school? What's, you know, I think people listening always like to hear that sort of, you know, that perspective from the parent out there.
You know, I think Charlotte's doing her best. Her school situation's really messed up. I think I mentioned last week when we did the pod that her teacher never came back in person, so they're learning from a TV screen. You know, Charlotte, how things are going. She goes, well, it's not the best. You know, her afternoon teacher has been really amazing. And it just goes to show, like, look, we've had all range of experience in this. You know, we've had teachers who have been incredible, teachers who've been, you know, pretty good. Some that haven't, you know, done a great job of this, and some that just bailed. You know what I mean? And yeah. I don't blame anybody for bailing. To tell you the truth, I think it's smarter to bail than do a bad job. Like, if you feel the situation is not working for you, it's such an important one that, you know, the kind of safeguards are in effect that, you know, take that time, like, you know, let somebody else figure it out. It's been a real mess, obviously, but we also came to the realization that we have one goal this year, and that's healthy and happy.
Yeah.
If anything gets learned, great. If it doesn't, you know, we'll just do more homework next year.
But yeah.
But, you know, I'd rather deal with a kid who still feels optimistic about learning than, you know, but maybe has missed a couple of math lessons than a kid who's just like, I fucking lost and I hate this, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a good way of looking at it. Healthy and happy is better than knowing the capital of Saskatchewan.
Right. Which, as we all know, is Regina. Right?
Regina. Yeah. Right. Oh, by the way.
Yeah, sorry.
Real quick, speaking of Regina, I was doing the CFL column. I tried to work in Dildo, Newfoundland, Labrador. It didn't make the final cut.
No, eh? That's so funny. It's a place.
I've been there. I stayed at a delightful bed and breakfast. And, you know, we still giggle about it. Anyway, you mentioned Regina, so that just came in my head. But, okay, so, yeah, Bob, I think that is the right approach.
Sorry, I got to get going, but I'm in the depths of Lenten privation, so let's end on this. Ooh. Tell me something delicious or fun you've done in the last week since we last talked.
Okay, so on Wednesday night, I was co-hosting this virtual wine tasting from the wines of Spain, and we didn't even do any wines from Rioja. And I've got to tell you, this semi-oaked Albarino went so well with the tiger shrimp. It was delicious.
And to that I say, last night I had bok choy for dinner.
Buck Choi, buck that. Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.